Hi, everybody. I am so happy to be here and not back in my office in Washington at one of those endless meetings I have to be in. I want to thank CTIC and Karen for inviting me, Tim for being just putting this whole idea together. I understand this is many years in the making. I was talking to Mike Hubbs about his engagement in these tours every year and just how high quality they are, and it's just a real pleasure to be here. This is where I do most of my learning, on the ground, listening to producers, listening to folks, experts in the ag industry and in conservation. So it's a real pleasure. And it's not quite as hot today as it's been, so that's also a real pleasure. I just want to acknowledge some of the NRCS folks here in the audience. We've got Leonard Jordan. Leonard, there you are. We also have Mike Hubbs, I just mentioned, Norm Widman, whom some of you or all of you have probably heard of, and then Jacqueline Furnett. Jacqueline, where are you over there? This is part of a very small part of Team NRCS, which is just a fabulous agency to work with. I just, you know, I was here in Virginia back in June. We were rolling out one of the showcase watersheds for this Chesapeake Bay Initiative. And what that is, it's one of three small sub-watersheds in the basin where we are demonstrating with in intense partnerships with some of our other partners, private landowners, conservation districts, state, local officials, just a variety of partners, how we can put systems of agricultural practices on the ground to reduce nutrient and sediment runoff in the basin. And the idea here is that we're going to be experimenting with different approaches. Our goal is to get 100% saturation of landowner participation, and we'll figure out what works, what doesn't, and then ideally scale it up so that we can be taking this model throughout the watershed and get the kind of participation in these conservation practices, these voluntary conservation practices that we're seeing here in this area that we have seen today. Which isn't to say that you're not already accomplishing some amazing work, and obviously the tour this morning proves that you don't need a showcase watershed to demonstrate how this is done, and I want to congratulate everybody who has worked so hard to bring these practices to bear here and to do your part. You know, another thing from this morning's tour is just the diversity of folks who are involved in tackling these problems. And, you know, from the academics to Virginia Tech folks have been really helpful in describing some of the work they're doing. We've got, of course, the landowners, the conservation district, the for-profit entities, you name it. And it is these webs of partnerships that certainly are the hallmark of how NRCS and USDA does its work, but frankly is how we're going to get the job done going into the future. And I think that we can all agree, while there are some concerns around the TMDLs and certainly concerns facing agriculture today, I think we can all agree that the end goal, which is a healthy Chesapeake Bay, is a part of the future we have to realize. But the other side to that coin is we have to have thriving agriculture. And in fact, you cannot, as the Secretary Vilsack would say, you cannot have a thriving Chesapeake Bay and not have thriving agriculture as part of that. It's a really important part of the equation. Not only to provide food, fiber, and fuel, and increasingly these credits for these emerging markets, whether it's wetland mitigation or nutrient markets or carbon markets, but also to retain the heritage. I mean, we saw this, we see this standing here right now today. We saw it at our very first stop this morning, and the hundreds of acres just a mile from Jamestown. It's really an important part of who we are as a nation to protect these open spaces, to keep farms as farms, to keep ranches as ranches, keep private timber in private timber. And this was certainly a theme that was sounded by President Obama back in, I think it's April now, March or April, when he held the first, he announced the America's Great Outdoors Initiative here back in Washington, D.C., where he very clearly stated that 21st century conservation is going to be in large part achieved through private lands conservation, which makes sense. When you think about almost 70% of the land in the lower 48 states is in private hands. So if we're going to achieve the conservation vision that I think we all share as a nation that we need to share to make sure we remain a resilient and competitive country and we can feed ourselves and the rest of the world. We're going to have as partners the private landowners, agribusiness, and the whole network of partners we see here today. So that's a really important cornerstone to his vision for 21st century conservation. We've been leading a series of listening sessions, starting off in Washington, D.C., and I know a couple of you were at that, all over the country, from California and Wyoming and Montana to I'll be in Maine at the end of the month, to New York. I'm going up to the Hudson River later this week, listening to what people have to say. And I'll tell you one thing. You know, America's Great Outdoors is about how we protect our public lands as well as private lands. But what is really interesting is I've heard from folks who have attended each of these listening sessions, you know, whether it's USGA or Department of Interior folks, without question, the people who show up and the people who have the loudest voice are the private landowners. And what I love about this is that we are really putting private land stewardship on the map for the country to see its place, its role in 21st century conservation. So I think there will be a report going to the president in November, and I think that is going to be a blueprint for how this administration carries out its conservation vision. I think it will be helpful as we start looking at how farm bill programs are going to be laid out in the next farm bill. It's going to be a great opportunity for those of you who have a vision and have strong ideas to influence it. So the website is going to be up, americasgreatoutdoors.gov, until September 15th, I understand. You can, if you haven't been part of a listening session, or if you've gone and you still don't feel your voice has been, you want to add some points, I really strongly encourage you to go to that website, make your voice heard, because I can guarantee you we are reading the comments. We're taking those very seriously. This conservation vision is also important because according to our data, and I know you all know this, we're losing approximately 200 acres of farm and private forest land a day in this country to development. And apart from the effect on open spaces generally, we all know that developed land, especially in this basin, it's been proven, is delivering more nutrients and bad stuff into the bay than farmland. And so I think from certainly a Chesapeake Bay health perspective, we need to fight to keep these lands in as farms and as private forests. Now, I know that the TMDL, this issue has come up this morning, and Kelly mentioned it. There's folks who are really concerned about this TMDL. And there are certainly some challenges attached to it. There are some opportunities as well, and I will say that USDA NRCS stands ready to provide landowners and all of you with the resources that you need to help put conservation practices on the ground that work. So, for instance, this year we have, $43 million in addition to baseline farm bill dollars that we're investing in Chesapeake Bay. Next year we're going to have $73 million. So we're putting a lot of money out there, not only cost share dollars, but also technical assistance dollars. And that was a point that came up this morning in terms of working to develop these conservation plans to identify the suite of practices that are really going to have the greatest impact. And we're working with our state partners and local partners and conservation districts to make sure that money flows to where it is most needed in terms of what the TMDL is for any particular segment in any particular state. So we've got those resources we're standing ready to provide. We also, Kelly mentioned the EPA innovation grants. Just as they're about to announce theirs, we're going to be announcing the NRCS Conservation Innovation Grants. I will give you a preview that there are five winners for this year's. We did a special CIG for the Chesapeake Bay. And these, of course, identify some of the brightest, best ideas, the most innovative ideas for pilots. And the idea is we'll test them. If they work, we can scale them up. But I think these are really the kinds of technologies and concepts that are being developed that will be additive to, you know, once you get your conservation tillage in place, your comprehensive nutrient management plans in place, what is the next level? What's going to get us to even greater results? And I think CIG, Conservation Innovation Grants, are a great driver for that. Another topic that came up at the panel, which I just thought was fabulous, at the prior stop with the three producers answering very honestly some intriguing questions, and that is, how accurate is the data that the federal government is using to base the TMDL on? And I want you to know that we are working with, USDA is working with the USGS to make sure that we are, in fact, not only capturing but putting into the model really accurate numbers about what the voluntary conservation practices are. And then we're also working with EPA and other partners to capture those practices that producers have been putting on the ground where they haven't been using cost share dollars. So, in fact, we get a complete picture, and we know where to assign we know who's responsible for putting what into the water. So I think there is a real commitment here to getting the data right and getting the science right, because we as I think it was, I'm not related to him, but Mr. Mills said earlier, you know, if I know what my part is and I know what everybody else's part is, then I'll be happy to play by the rules. I'll be willing to play by the rules. I think the onus is on us, the government, to make sure that we have the greatest amount of accuracy and transparency for all of us, and I think that just leads to a much stronger outcome. So we are working on that. We recognize that this is a top priority for the ag industry and for agriculture generally in the basin. I could go on. There are a number of other things that we're doing here, particularly in the basin, but I did want to talk a little bit about the Conservation Effects Assessment Program, which some of you may have heard of. The acronym is SEAP, and leave it to the federal government to come up with just an awful acronym for a very, very exciting tool. SEAP, it sounds dreadful, but actually this is very cool. It's a multi-year study that we've been doing with USDA, with Agricultural Research Service, other partners, to measure what the, and this is again goes to the point about science and accuracy and creating really great tools for all of us to use to improve how we put conservation on the ground. And it's studying what the true conservation benefits are from different practices. And we just released a SEAP report in the for the Upper Mississippi River Basin, and we're poised to release one for the Chesapeake Bay. It's being peer-reviewed right now. I'm not quite sure what the timeline is, but there are a couple of key points I want to make about this. First is that this is arguably the most definitive study, by the way, on conservation practices. Conservation practices work. They are doing their job. And I think that that is really exciting, and I think that, you know, folks like EPA and our other federal partners and state partners are going to be really interested in looking at that and having it inform the Bay model and other models that we're using. So that's the good news. The challenge is that we still have a way to go. What this is helping us identify is exactly what suite of practices will yield the best result on different soil types and soils and slopes of land and so forth. So it's going to be a really useful tool. We do have a ways to go, but the bottom line is that time-honored practices do work. You don't have to spend a ton of money. You can do no-till. You can do comprehensive nutrient management plans and get a lot out of that. But what is clear is you do need to do a suite of practices, and you need to do it consistently all the time. And that's a message we're going to really have to looking for folks like you to help. You know, we all need to drive that message. We need to get that high level of participation, and we need to get consistent participation in order to get the outcomes we can actually then prove, so that agriculture gets the credit it definitely deserves. One other thing I wanted to mention before I close is environmental markets. And I was really intrigued to hear some of the comments this morning, how not only those of us here, but also some of the producers we visited are starting to see these markets crop up. Thanks to the 2008 Farm Bill, USDA, the Secretary of Agriculture, was charged with helping create a framework for these markets to thrive nationally. What does that mean? Well, to develop metrics so we could measure what is a carbon credit? What is a nutrient credit? What does that mean? What does that mean to me as a producer? to develop the metrics and then figure out, okay, how do we verify whether or not this credit is actually worth what we're saying it is? How do we register it? How do we, you know, do we create banks and so forth? So to make, and I think one of the wise choices that Congress made in parking this responsibility at USDA is that we are committed to making sure these markets work for producers. We can test them so that they're not, you know, not something that hedge fund managers can run, but actually we can run. And at the same time, we're developing these this framework, and we're working in partnership with our federal and state partners and academics and really smart people who know how this works. We're looking to pilot this across the country, just as there already are some pilots. But we're also developing some tools. So just one, I'll give you a preview of it, still being developed. It's called the Nutrient Trading Tool. And basically, imagine yourself sitting at your kitchen table with your laptop, and you can go in and find your actual farm on a database that is populated on the back end by a bunch of USDA data and other data, and actually plot out the acres you're interested in looking at. And you'll get the actual soil type and the slope and so forth, the profile. And then you can, just sitting there at the table, play around with, well, what if I backed out this much nitrogen or this much phosphorus, or, you know, play around with the nutrient, your inputs, and see if it affects your yield. And if it doesn't affect your yield, or if it only marginally affects your yield, then it will tell you, okay, I've saved this much, I backed out this many nutrients, that's worth me putting into a credit that I can sell to a bank and make some money off of. So the idea here, again, is to make this really real for producers so they can actually, in a very user-friendly way, start to participate in these markets so that not only are you growing corn and soybean and raising cattle, but you're also growing credits. And it's another way of acknowledging in a monetary way the value that our producers bring in protecting our land. And it's the environmental services that they produce, and they finally will get paid for those environmental services. So there's just a lot going on that is that's so exciting. But I think, just in closing, you come out and you see the passion and the dedication and the new ideas and the risks that especially the landowners are taking, but all of you are invested in, so that we can get to a better place. And I was talking to a couple of folks this morning, and I've talked about this in the past. This is the story of agriculture truly being part of the solution and of farmers being the hero in the narrative that is 21st century conservation. And I don't know about you all, but I think that in the mainstream media, we need to change the story that is told about American agriculture and what you guys are doing here in the basin. And we need to get some of these reporters out here who just tend to, I think, frankly, I hope there are, well, there's one or two reporters here. This is off the record. But I think, you know, get out here and see the work that's going on. So it's not just a knee-jerk reaction, well, it's all ag's fault. Because you know what? It isn't. And I think ag has a lot to bring to the table, and that needs to be recognized. So I want to work with folks, and I have to say that, Karen, you've done a magnificent job, and maybe we need to get some of these reporters out down here in Virginia, because this state's certainly doing a great job, but to do the outreach and education with the media to tell, so they all tell a different story. And so the next time you pick up, you know, the... well, I don't know how the Richmond News plays this, but the Washington Post or the papers in Maryland and Pennsylvania and other states, that we see perhaps a more balanced story being told, because you all deserve a lot of credit. So my hat is off to you all, and I'm just excited about what we're going to see this afternoon in terms of the next generation of tools that we can apply to make an even healthier and more sustainable agricultural reality here and across the country. Thank you very much.